Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of January 2017. This is the first episode of the new year. Happy New Year to you guys. I hope you had a wonderful holiday season. And I also hope that episode 36 isn't just, you know, just really pounding in your head from a massive hangover. Yes, this is episode 36 of my Paranormal Podcast, which comes out on the first of every month. Guys, welcome. Hope you guys had a wonderful holiday season. I know I did. And before I get started and dig in, I just want to say a big thank you, of course, to this episode's sponsor, Donuts & Dragons Board Game Cafe. Thank you so much for sponsoring us once again. This little shop will be opening up on Stavanger Drive in January. Keep your eyes to the Facebook page. They got a Facebook group. Jump on there. It's going to be awesome. Where else can you have a nice premium coffee and have a game of D&D with your buddies, man? Geek out, guys. What a year it's been. It was the year of Brexit. It was the year the Chicago Cubs won the World Series. That the Donald became president. That Fidel Castro, a hero in my opinion, passed away. There was a supernova moon. The Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro and Fort McMurray almost burning to cinders. The Pulse nightclub shootings. The Syria crisis getting worse. And a Russian ambassador was shot dead from Turkey. We lost so many heroes as well. David Bowie, Prince, Leonard Cohen, Muhammad Ali, Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey Gone, Alan Rickman, Mr. Snape. Of course, we also lost Carrie Fisher, who was Princess Leia. Everyone's favorite mayor, Rob Ford. China, a.k.a. Joan Lurie, who's of wrestling fame and also porno. Can't forget poor old Kimbo Slice. He also bit the dust this year. Elie Wiesel, the author of Night, one of my favorite books from high school. Miss Cleo, yeah, Miss Cleo. Even Miss Cleo herself decided to passed away this year. Bad, bad year for Star Wars fans, because you know who else passed away this year? Bleep, blop, bleep, blop, bloop, bloop, bleep, bleep, bleep. Yeah, R2-D2, Kenny Baker, he passed away too. Pure imagination. Poor old Gene Wilder went away. Florence Henderson from the Brady Bunch died. Alan Thicke, Zsa Gabor, George Michael, Debbie Reynolds, of course, passed away the night after Carrie Fisher died, Princess Leia. Guys, this just 2016, there's just so many celebrities dead in heaven now, I think I can be a movie star now. There's just so many job openings in Hollywood, honest to God. But you know what? It wasn't all bad. There was some really great stuff that happened in 2016 too. Like, for instance, Einstein's gravitational waves theory was proven, you know, to be real. We actually discovered and conquered the Zika virus. Yeah, that big scare started and was actually contained. And you know what? If all else fails, if 2017 isn't any better, I'm just gonna throw it up to you guys. We found a new Earth. Yeah. Proxima Centauri, a second Earth that is habitable, by no means, of course, close, but we could get there. Guys, if it all goes to hell again this year, we can always just jump on a thing. jump on a spaceship and, fly there. I think it's really, really cool when we think back on our year. One thing my family does is this little thing called the Good Tidings Jar, where we put just every little great thing that happened all year round, just write in a little note and the date, and we stick it in this jar. And on New Year's Eve, we read it together as a family. And it's a really awesome thing to do. My little girl loves it, and I love it too, because it just reminds you that, that the year wasn't all bad. There was a lot of good things that happened too. So don't let all the, you know, top stories of 2016 bum you out, because most of them are horrible news anyway, because that's what sells, right? Tell you what, let's have a little bit of fun. Whenever you see, wherever you see this podcast posted to, you know, if you're on Podbean listening or Stitch or whatever, why don't you leave a little comment, a little review, and tell me what's the best and worst thing that happened to you in 2016? I think that'd be a lot of fun. I'll go ahead and let you know what my best thing was and worst thing. The worst thing was definitely my financial situation. There's no doubt about it. I hardly had steady work all year round. It totally sucked. I hate my job. But you know what? 2017, looking like we got a new job on the horizon with better pay. So I'm really excited about that. And also, the best part of 2016, beyond a shadow of doubt, was the birth of my son, Sam. So cool. Love the fact that my little guy is now here. And you haven't got to think too hard and long about some of the blessings that came in 2016. So don't let the celebrity desk get you bummed out, guys. Don't let the few bad things that happened to you this year make you say, this is the worst year that ever happened. Because you know what reality is? Time doesn't really even exist. It's all relative. There you go. little nerdy physics joke for you. Time is relative. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. What matters is the little bit of good that actually happened along the way. So do yourself a favor. Write down some of the best things that happened. And once again, write down in the show notes, wherever you see this posted. You know what? Throw it out there. Hey, guess what? Here's the best thing that happened to me and the worst thing that happened to me. So we can all get to know you a little better. If you have not subscribed to this podcast, okay, I'm going to let you in a little secret. Maybe this is the first time you've ever heard my show. So I'm just going to throw this out there to you. This is really, really important. This is a once a month podcast, which means that it's very easy to either forget about this show or be completely absorbed in other shows. I'm a believer that, you know, once a month we can have just something really magical. I think the first of every month is a great time to have a podcast because it gives you something to look forward to the first of every month. I personally look forward to releasing this on the 1st of January. I can't wait. I'm going to say this to people. If you don't subscribe, though, it's easy to forget about this podcast. You know what? Wherever you're to, whether you're on a different apps. I mean, I'm on like 100 different apps. Like, it's everywhere. Stitcher, Podbean, oh my God. TuneIn Radio is a big one. Subscribe. I'll just give an example. You know, like TuneIn Radio. I had no idea the listenership I had on TuneIn Radio. I had no idea that almost 300 people are subscribed to me over there. It blew my mind. I had no idea they even existed because, to be honest with you, I don't really pay too much attention to the numbers on my show. I might check on it every now and then to make sure that things are going okay. But reality is, I don't really focus a whole lot on how famous I am, we'll say. My focus is on giving you guys the best show possible. It really is. So when I looked and I seen, oh my God, almost 300 people. This is just unbelievable. Just, I was so blown away and just so humbled by that. And I'm telling you, this is the best way to get my podcast. Because you know what? If you're not subscribed to me, I know I'm not the most important thing in your life. So why not know that we're all crazy human beings and we're probably going to forget and hit that subscribe button wherever you're to. Speaking of subscriptions, I've recently also started putting the podcast up on the Life After Death Society Facebook pages and also our YouTube page. So don't forget to check that out as well. Life After Death Society is my paranormal investigating team, which consists of me and anybody who'd like to come with me. I don't believe in the whole gotta be a trained team member thing. It's just foolishness. I'm out to have fun with this. So, you know, check that out. LifeAfterDeathSociety.com, of course, is where you can learn more about me and my books and whatnot. But, you know what? The YouTube channel, Life After Death Society, look it up. You'll see Johnny Mallard. You'll see my name pop up. And now my podcast will also be on YouTube. A lot of people listening on YouTube. For the life of me, I'll never understand why. Because, like, it's just so much more data. But I guess what it might be is a lot of people are kind of leaving YouTube on in the background of their lives. It's hooked up to the Wi-Fi. It's like another TV. And sometimes they listen to podcasts. So more power to you. If you want to subscribe and also listen to some EVPs and some of the stuff I got on there as well, check out the Life After Death Society on YouTube. Check it out. Really, really cool. There you go, guys. I spent the last 10 minutes yammering on about how great this year was. But it's not like the world has come to an end or anything. Yeah. You know what that means, don't you? Yeah. The paranormal news. The first paranormal news of the year 2017. Now, this is going to be great because you know what? I love how this new year is already shaping up, because let me tell you, 2016 was a friggin' weird year, man. It was weird. Like, Donald Trump's the president now. What the hell? Like, it was probably one of the weirdest years on record, but you know what? Things are not getting any easier or less strange. Nope. And you know what? We're gonna hear from some old friends and stuff. Yeah. Like, the paranormal news is gonna be going right into the Loch Ness Monster. That's right. What if I told you that once again, this is 4 years in a row, the Loch Ness Monster sightings are on the rise again. Statistically, yeah, it's happening. There have been more sightings of the elusive creature this year than during any other this millennium. That's it. This is the most popular Nessie time in the last 17 years. Just imagine. It has been a solid 12 months for the world's best-known cryptozoological mystery, with 7 reported sightings so far. That's 2 more than were reported during the previous year. Describing the upward trend is fantastic Gary Campbell, keeper of the official Loch Ness Monster Sighting Register, believes that a rise in the number of people carrying smartphones and a growing interest in watching the Loch on webcams could be at least partially responsible. It means there are more people than ever looking for Nessie, which would explain the rise in sightings, he told the Press and Journal. One of the most recent sightings of the monster was reported back in August by government worker Ian Campbell, who, along with his son and family friends, had been cycling along the side of the loch when they witnessed 2 strange creatures in the water. A visitor to Urquhart Castle also reported seeing 2 dark shapes in the loch on the same day. No definitive explanation for either of the sightings was ever found. A full list of all the recent sightings, along with photographs, can be viewed online. There you go, guys. What can I say? One of the oldest paranormal mysteries out there is the Loch Ness Monster, and Nessie just don't want to die. He's still out there in the water, floating around. But you know, he's a mystery. What if I told you there really are river monsters, and we keep discovering them? Well, actually, we discovered more species this year than any other, but I'll say this. We actually discovered something really, really wild. A giant air-breathing fish has been found in the Amazon. Now, this is for real. A new species of the mysterious Arapaima have been discovered in the remote backwaters of the Amazon, measuring up to 10 feet long and weighing up to 440 pounds. The Arapaima has long remained something of an enigma, found within the oxygen-depleted backwaters of South America. This monster of the rainforest breathes air through a primitive lung and has managed to evade study thanks to its remote location and the fact that it is quite a difficult fish to catch. I can imagine why. You probably need like a full schooner to catch a freaking 10-foot long fish. Up until now, the Arapaimas found in the Amazon have been thought to belong to the same species, albeit with regional variations. According to National Geographic explorer Donald J. Stewart and colleagues, however, there could actually be several species, many of them undiscovered. Their findings were based on a specimen collected in 2001, which was turned out to be a distinctly different species to most of the apparatus caught in the region. I think we'll have many more species before we're done, said Stewart. While the discovery is good news for biologists, it also means that some of these elusive fish may be a lot more in danger than previously believed. These days, it is illegal to catch Arapaimas, and they are thought to be only around 5,000 left in the world. If this population consists of several different species, then it means that many of those are going to be a lot more in danger, and some could even be on the brink of extinction. We need to pay attention to this diversity so we don't eliminate one of them, said Stewart. You know, I love seeing that there's new species being discovered all the time. It shows you that there's some positivity still out there, guys. There's still good things happening in this world. And sometimes we just forget about that. That's only one of the species that was discovered this year. Did you know that in the Mekong region, there's been 163 new species discovered this year? Researchers have identified a large number of new flora and fauna in the Mekong River Basin. Despite being under the threat of deforestation, mining, and other destructive human activities, the Mekong River Basin in Southeast Asia has been offering up a wealth of new species lately. Among the most recent discoveries announced by the World Wildlife Fund is a snake that has been likened to David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust character due to its unique coloration and the death of the singer this year. A small orange frog, a brightly colored newt, and a lizard with a dragon-like horn protruding from its head. So cool. The Greater Mekong region keeps reminding us that there are many incredible unexplored areas leading to the new discoveries happening every year, and it is crucial that we protect them before they are lost, said Jimmy Bora, wildlife program manager for WWF Greater Mekong. Outside of the Mekong region, there were also other discoveries as well, including the amusingly named Killing Newt of Thailand and a woolly bat from the central highlands of Vietnam. Of course, you can view all these animals online. So what am I getting at here? Why did I put these three stories about wildlife together? Well, you're hearing about brand new species, giant brand new species, 160 new species found in a river basin. I mean, is it really that far a stretch to think that just maybe there is a Loch Ness monster or an Ogopogo, like we like to call them in Canada, or any other river monster like that? I would like to believe that there's nothing as unexplored as the oceans. I know that we find monsters all the time. And I'm going to give you another example yet again of something that was discovered this month back in December. A ghost shark was finally caught on film for the first time. An enigmatic species of shark found in the Pacific has been captured on film off the coast of California. Also known as chimeras, these distinct dead-eyed cartilaginous fish branched off from sharks over 400 million years ago and have been silently roaming the ocean depths ever since. Now, for the first time, researchers at the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute in California have released footage showing a particularly elusive species of ghost shark in its natural habitat. The video was captured using a remotely operated submersible vehicle. The guys doing the video were actually geologists, said David Eber, program director for the Pacific Shark Research Center at Moss Landing Marine Laboratories. Normally, people probably wouldn't have been looking around in this area, so it's a little bit of a dumb luck thing. We got lucky. Known as the pointy-nosed blue chimera, this extremely elusive variety of ghost shark was thought to live only in the southern hemisphere, meaning that this is also the first specimen ever found north of the equator. And of course, you can see footage of the creature at National Geographic. Guys, there you have it. Another species, a ghost shark. Guys, well, first off, this caught my eye right away because it says ghost. And I think that's really cool, you know, being a paranormal investigator. But I'm just going to throw this out here to you for anybody who's really into this stuff and can appreciate this. 2016 was a big year for habitat and animals. We keep killing our planet. We keep killing what's on it, but we keep discovering more and more and more. Does it balance the scales, we'll say? Definitely not. There's nothing good about the amount of species that go extinct every year here on this planet. But I'm going to say this. I can't help but feel like a little kid knowing that there's still stuff out there that we haven't discovered yet. And it just gives me that little tiny bit of hope that maybe things like the Yeti, maybe things like Loch Ness Monster, maybe things like the Mothman, maybe demons. Maybe these things are out there, we just haven't discovered them yet. And I think that's really cool. I really do. Onward with more weird animal news. I know we've just gotten really into animals this time, but what can I say? 2016 was just an awesome year, but December, like, was just so full of weird animal stuff. So we'll just go right on to this. Remember what a thylacine is? Huh? Do you know what that is? It's a Tasmanian tiger, baby. One of the weirdest things in the world. Anyway, you gotta look this up if you've never seen them before, but we all know that they've gone extinct. Well, apparently not. There's a group called the Thylacine Awareness Group of Australia, and they actually released two new clips of what they feel is a thylacine in the wild. Two clips. Now, the group, which believes that the thylacine or Tasmanian tiger actually continues to survive to this day, despite being officially declared extinct in the 1980s, has released several videos over the last few months showing what some people believe to be evidence that the species is alive and well. The latest footage, which contains two separate clips, was recorded on a trail camera near Busselton, Western Australia, back in 2013. The video shows a fox-like animal trotting along past the camera in two different directions. The group's founder, Neil Waters, claims that he himself witnessed a thylacine on two separate occasions outside his home in Tasmania as recently as 2010 and 2014. While he admits the footage is inconclusive, it does add to the growing body of evidence suggesting that the Tasmanian tiger may continue to roam the wilds of Australia. Until a tangible, physical specimen is found, however, it will be impossible to know for sure. Well, I would love to hear that, because you know what? I think it'd be great. A species that we thought had died out really because of us, okay, that we killed might still be roaming the planet. Man, I think that's a great thing. And let's just hope that these thylacines are real because, well, first off, the idea of something called the Tasmanian tiger just sparks memories of my childhood looking at the Tasmanian devil, which is actually a real animal, by the way, and very nasty. But I'm going to say this. Wouldn't it be great to rediscover this species? You know, a little bit of hope for all of us. Anyway, here's something we don't hope for. Dinosaurs might return. Now, I talked last podcast at length last podcast at length about dinosaurs, I had a little thing, and it was, we're talking about Japan and how, you know, they might be having their own Jurassic Park full of animatronic dinosaurs, and like I totally freaked out because I think that's so cool. Well, they actually, for the first time ever, found a preserved in amber dinosaur tail, and it is just a tell-all piece of evidence as to what these things actually look like. The unprecedented 99 million year old specimen contains preserved bones, soft tissues, and feathers. The incredible discovery, which is being hailed as the world's first, has provided scientists with a unique opportunity to study not just a fossil, but an actual piece of a dinosaur frozen in time. The apricot-sized specimen, which was found in an amber mine in northeastern Myanmar, contains the perfectly preserved tail of a juvenile coelurosaur, a type of theropod dinosaur. Scans of the amber indicate the presence of 8 vertebrae from the tail's midsection, along with several delicate feathers, which have been described as brown on the top and white underneath. And of course, BBC News reported a beautiful dinosaur tail found preserved in amber, and you could just look this up. It's so cool. And it also just really rings true about how dinosaurs, most of them had feathers on them. And to me, it just explains where they all went. You see, not all dinosaurs went in the ground. A lot of them are on your plate every night for supper. Yeah, chickens. I got one last piece of weird animal news. I'm sorry, I didn't mean for this to be a complete animal paranormal news segment on my show. It just so happened that it all is. But you know what? Earlier this year, we started hearing about these weird sounds coming from the Marianas Trench. And they think they might have it figured out. Now, the mystery sound has been heard near the Marianas Trench for a long time. A mysterious sound recorded by researchers could actually be a never-before-heard whale call picked up by an anonymous robot known as a passive acoustic ocean glider, which are typically used to record whale vocalizations at depths of up to 1,000 meters. The strange sound was recorded on a regular basis during the fall and spring in a region of the Pacific Ocean to the east of Guam. Consisting of 5 parts with a duration of around 3.5 seconds, the sound, which has been dubbed the Western Pacific Biotwang, is now thought to be an unknown minke whale call. It's very distinct with all these crazy parts, said marine bioacoustics expert Sharon Newkirk from Oregon State University. The low-frequency moaning is typical of baleen whales, and it's that kind of twangy sound that makes it really unique. We don't find many new baleen whale calls. Most of them have been documented as far as we know. Efforts are now underway to try and translate the call to find out what exactly it means. If it's a mating call, why are we getting it year-round? That's a mystery, said Newkirk. We need to determine how often the call occurs in summer versus winter and how widely this call is really distributed. Now, I'm going to play this for you guys, and it is creepy as hell. But I'm going to play it for you guys just so you guys can get a feel for how weird it is. Part of me wants to just play this for the rest of the podcast and see how many people unsubscribe. You know, Marianas Trench is the deepest part of our world. It's so weird. And to think that there's these sounds coming up out of it, I mean, it just blows my mind to know there's so many weird friggin' things going on our planet. But, you know, there's also a lot of weird things going on outside our planet. And I'm so glad I get to follow up on a story we actually covered earlier in 2016. So here we are, 2017, and scientists say radio signals from deep space could be aliens. Guys, our top story of the year, no matter what you want to say, it's definitely this when it comes to the paranormal. The world's largest fully steerable radio telescope at the National Radio Astronomy Observatory in Green Bank, West Virginia. You guys are awesome. Thank you for what you do, because now we may have evidence, data collected that this just might be somebody else out there. Scientists may have found proof that ET really is phoning home in the form of powerful radio signals, which have been detected repeatedly in the same exact location in space. Astronomy experts with the Green Bank Telescope in Puerto Rico have discovered 6 new fast radio bursts, or FRBs, they call them for short, emanating from a region far beyond our Milky Way galaxy. according to a recent report in the Astrophysical Journal. The discovery, made in the direction of constellation Auriga, is significant considering the fact that at least 17 FRBs have been detected in this area alone. It is also the only known instance in which these signals have been found twice in the same location in space. It's repeatable data, guys. That's what they need. This is what they haven't had before. The region where the signals are coming from, dubbed FRB-121102 by scientists, is about 3 billion light years away from Earth. Five of the recently found FRBs were detected with the Green Bank Telescope, while the other was recorded by the Arecibo Observatory, for a total of 17 bursts from the source, the report says. The signals were also found earlier in the year 2012. According to experts, the FRBs could be the result of two things: solar flares from a neutron star, or extraterrestrial in nature. But, of course, it's still too early to say. We can't jump to those conclusions. But it is a 1 in 2,000 chance of being coincidental. It's either one or the other. This is the best example of ET being real we have ever come across. We find that the detected signals have exactly the shape of an ETI, or extraterrestrial intelligence signal, wrote Emeril Bora of Eric Trottier. Although unlikely, there is also a possibility that the signals are due to highly peculiar chemical compositions in a small fraction of a galactic halo of stars. So there you go. I'm just going to throw this out there for you. Guys, so many weird things going on. This is the end of one of the weirdest years there ever been. And this is the beginning of hopefully one that's even weirder. Here's to the odd news from around the world. We got Loch Ness monster sightings on the rise. We got a giant air-breathing fish found in the Amazon. We got the first ever ghost shark caught on film. 163 new species found, discovered in the Mekong region. Two new videos of the Tasmanian tiger have surfaced. An actual dinosaur tail preserved in amber, and it has feathers. Go figure. A mysterious whale call coming from Mariana Trench could be the explanation to all the weirdness that's coming out of there lately. And now, for the first time ever, repeatable data, scientists say radio signals from deep space could be aliens. Guys, all these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast does not accept donations. In lieu of this, the Stella Burry Foundation is a registered charity established in 2005 to secure financial support for the work of Stella's Circle. Learn more and please give generously at stellaburry.ca. And now, back to the show.
All right, guys. Welcome back to the show. We're just about ready to jump into our New Year's oddities. 10 strange facts about our very, very, very odd world. Very true facts about a very odd world, I might add. But first, we're going to check in for the first time this year with our old friend Laura and the MUFON Minute. Laura, please start the year off right with some news from MUFON.
Thanks, John. Welcome to your MUFON Minute for January 2017. Another trip around the sun, and I am so pleased to be part of this wonderful podcast. John's passion and dedication are next to none, and he has a tremendous spirit. I wish you and your family and all the listeners the very best in this coming year. MUFON investigators in 2016 were very busy. Over 7,000 cases were investigated last year. In addition to these UFO investigations, there were also over 1,000 non-human entity encounters reported to the organization. As one of MUFON's field investigators, I'm very pleased to be part of this group that has over 40 years of experience. In the new year, MUFON hopes to move forward with a new mobile reporting system, an improved website, and a new questionnaire for experiencers. Have you heard of a sighting in Roswell, New Mexico? Well, maybe not this one. Case 80348 involves an interesting late-night encounter in the legendary town in October. While driving from Albuquerque to Carlsbad, a couple witnessed a triangle with white, blue, red, and green lights. The seemingly solid object came straight towards their truck, first becoming apparent approximately 20 feet in front of the husband and wife, and slowly moved towards the truck, hovered above, and then disappeared. They describe a feeling of unease. The MUFON investigator assigned to this case describes the strange event as having no conventional explanation for the nature of the described object. for all you snowbirds who may be headed to Florida, keep your eyes open. A metallic object was seen 500 feet over a residential area. There were solid lights on three corners and a flashing red light on the rear. The witness continued to watch the object as it turned, ascended, went straight up, and seemingly bent the sky as it went. Who knows what will happen in 2017? An increase in sightings? Complete disclosure? A massive unveiling of hidden truths? Well, we shall just have to see. Maybe 2017 will offer you your very own UFO sighting. Get out there with your cameras and binoculars. Of course, don't forget to bundle up. And perhaps you may see something very special. If you do, don't forget to report it to www.mufon.com. For more information about MUFON and Newfoundland and Labrador, please be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Thanks a lot, John.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddity.
All right, guys, it's time for oddities. 10 very strange but true facts about our world. Here they come. Did you know the word salary comes from the word salt, which ancient Roman soldiers received as part of their pay? You know what? If I ever start a business, I'm going to pay everybody with salt and see how that goes. All right. Moving along. The bikini swimsuit, which debuted in July 1946, was named after the American detonation of the atomic bomb at Bikini Atoll in the South Pacific on July 1st. Designer Louis Raird hoped the swimsuit would make a similar explosion in the fashion world. Well, let me tell you. Oh, Louis, I love bikinis. Next oddity. Celery was once considered a trendy high fashion food. It was served in its own vase, which was placed at the center of the table as a centerpiece. Really? I don't really think I'd be too high class on the radar, there if I had a smeared bun with peanut butter. Did you know New York bookseller Harry Sherman stated the first Book of the Month Club in 1926 to target people who lived in remote areas or were just too busy to keep up with new releases? The first selection was Lolly Willows, or The Loving Huntsman by Sylvia Townsend Warner, which was sent to 5,000 readers. Did you know the working title of the Beatles' hit With a Little Help from My Friends was Bad Finger Boogie? Did you know, according to Hollywood lore, silent film actress Norma Talmadge started the tradition of stars putting their footprints in the cement at Graham's Chinese Theater when she accidentally stumbled onto the freshly laid sidewalk in front of it in 1927. There you go. The whole Walk of Fame thing. Yep. It all started with an accident. Did you know the only active diamond mine in the United States is in Arkansas? Did you know ancient Romans believed the walnut was a physical model of the brain? The hard shell was the skull, the papery portion of the membrane, and the two pieces of nut were the two hemispheres of the brain. That's actually kind of cool. Did you know crocodiles and alligators are surprisingly fast on land, but they lack agility? If you're being chased by one, all you gotta do is run in a zigzag line and you'll be fine. Write that down, guys, especially my friends in Florida. And last but not least, did you know Isaac Newton, a notoriously distracted man, claimed that upon arising some mornings, he would sit motionless for hours upon the edge of his bed as new thoughts, presumably freed by the night's sleep, occurred to him? All those facts were very odd and very strange and also very, very, very true. I hope you guys enjoyed them. I'll be right back with tonight's guest. Yeah, that's right. We're going to be talking about the haunted hat rack in just a few minutes. Don't you dare go away.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Tonight's guest has family-rooted love for the theater and has founded his own theater company back in 2000 called the Riddlesbrook Touring Theater Company, which is one of the most successful and vibrant theater companies in good old New York, New York, and also New Jersey. In this area, he's been performing more than 150 murder mysteries and dinner theater shows per year at multiple locations. He got in touch with me for a more supernatural reason, though. His company, which has performed an incredible 1,500 shows, has inspired and was inspired by a ghostly presence. Tonight, the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast is proud to have Clyde Pete Riddlesbrook take center stage. Clyde, how are you tonight?
Hello, thanks for having me on. I feel great. Thank you.
Listen, it's nothing but a pleasure, and I'm just going to go ahead and dig right in. You got in touch with me. You told me that a ghost inspired your theater company. Now, this is something that just kind of tugged at my heartstrings because I have a little thing for Chicago. I'm not going to lie. But I also have a thing for the Phantom of the Opera. And, you know, as soon as you said a ghost inspired my theater company, I just knew I had to have you on. So, Clyde, please tell me this story. It's all news to me. I've never heard you before, and hopefully my listeners will get a sense of who you are from this ghostly tale.
Sure, certainly, certainly. Well, you know, when we started the theater company in 2000, probably a lot of brand new companies or entrepreneurs might tell you, you know, you don't really have a lot to start with. And when we were struggling to try to, you know, start out in the very beginning, you know, we didn't have a lot of gigs. We didn't have a lot of opportunities. So it was a real tough couple of years in the beginning trying to get started. And But the ultimate reason why I even named the company Riddlesbrood, and also what gave us the idea to even start the company in the first place, starts off in a rather unusual way, and actually it starts off with a series of very unusual dreams that I had had, some of which I had had even when I was a child. And for a while, after I got to be about 14 or 15, I hadn't had these dreams in a while, and to make a long story short, the dreams involved me being in some kind of very alien world, some unusual place, and there was always what I would call some kind of a presence that always seemed to be trying to, I guess you would call, make contact in some ways, and even though it was in different shapes and forms sometimes, I always knew it was like one thing that was trying to do this. And then as I got older, I really didn't have that dream for a long time, many years, until about a few months before I began the theater company. And then pretty much out of nowhere, I started to have this dream again that I hadn't had for so many years. And it was amazing. I was like, whoa, I remember this. And to make a long story short, what happened was I kept having the same dream where I was walking through this alien landscape, this wooden landscape, and there was this, I guess you would say, like this bright mountain that had at the top of it a shining kind of light radiance that shined all through it. That was like the only source of light in this entire place. And I kind of felt like I was being chased around there, and things were there. And then when I woke up, I was at the time living at my mother's house, and I was living in her attic. And what was happening is when I woke up, I still felt that this thing, whatever was chasing me in my dream or whatever was following me or watching me or was in the room. And at first, you know, you just kind of laugh it off and, you know, it's just a feeling and stuff like that. But after a few times, it started to psych me out a little bit. I really started to think, you know, there's something really weird going on, because, you know, I really would have a hard time when I woke up going back to sleep, because I really felt like there was something in this attic, something that was trying to maybe make contact with me in some way through the dream. So that's really the very beginning part of it. The next thing that kind of became unusual is that we found this unusual hat rack, and it was the very first prop we ever had, and we found it in the garbage, actually, at a house nearby. And at the time, we were looking for props for the very first show that we were doing, which was A Christmas Carol. And of course, the Christmas Carol, you know, has a lot of Victorian flavor, unusual things from that time period. So we sent all the actors out to try to find cool things, and we found this hat rack, and it was really kind of weird. Now, even the fact that I speak of the hat rack and single it out as a specific prop is actually kind of doing it a disservice, because one of the weird things about this thing is that it had a strange ability to be not noticed. And what I mean by that is everybody called it a different thing. Some people called it a hat rack. Some people called it a clothes tree. Some people called it a hat stand, a clothes rack. Everybody seemed to call it something different. And even some people seemed to think it was a different colors. It actually is kind of like a silver color, but many people thought it was gold. And some people thought it was like a gunmetal color, and that was its unusual thing in the beginning, which was just the fact that everybody would call it something different, and nobody seemed to remember it ever being quite the same way. So what would happen is, if you didn't see it for a couple of days and then you saw it when you came to do the show, you'd just feel odd, because it the memory that you had of what this thing looked like didn't seem to match what it was that you're seeing. So it was like, that's really weird. It seems jarring, because you didn't remember it looking quite like that. So it kind of was bizarre that way, but it was also kind of an unspoken thing. The next thing is it kind of had this unusual thing where during shows and theatrical performances, people often lose things. Like, they might lose a glove, or they might lose their vest for their costume, or a belt or something like that. And, you know, you go out for your scene and you realize, oh, man, I don't have my shirt. I don't have my hat. And the funny thing started to happen where people would these things would go missing, and they'd walk out for their scene without this proper costume piece. But at the end of the show, they'd always find it on the hat rack, either hanging on a hook, or maybe laying at the bottom of it by the feet, or being real close to it, or maybe even in the pocket. Hanging on the hat rack. Like, one time somebody couldn't find their glasses, and then somebody found it in the pocket. So of course everybody starts to think, like, oh, people are starting to joke around with this, you know, purposely stealing things and then hanging on this hat rack just to screw with people, you know. So it started to develop this unusual legend and mythology about it as we went more and more into the shows, especially after the first year or two went by. And it became kind of like a little bit of an icon and a tradition that we always put the hat rack in every show, you know. So at first it was in the Christmas Carol, but then we did a Western show. We put it in the Western bar in the back, a saloon. And then we did a pirate show. And we even had it in the captain's cabin, you know. So we kept using it over and over again. So I mention that because it just is kind of like a building of these unusual things that added a sense of mysteriousness to the experience of being involved as an actor in the very beginning of this company. And the name itself is unusual, because I came to believe at a later date that the dreams that I was having was reminiscent of when I was a young child. Me and my friends and my brothers used to play Dungeons and Dragons and a lot of role-playing games. You know, we really got off on that, had a lot of fun with that, and played for hours and hours and hours and hours. And in the particular world that I had invented, whenever I was the Dungeon Master, there was a character called Riddlesbrood. And he was this kind of very mysterious necromancer-like character that one never really saw, but he was always kind of behind all the bad things that might go on, you know. So kind of like a Sauron, or like an evil Voldemort, you know, kind of like, you know, one of those evil, you know, beings that's not quite seen. So when we first started the theater company and I was having these dreams, I kind of thought it kind of seemed interesting to me, because my brothers at the time were also actors and very involved in the theater when it started. So we thought it would be cool to call the theater company Riddlesbrood, like as if this was his, you know, company, you know, which was kind of nefarious, because all of us really liked, you know, Tim Burton and Beetlejuice, and the theater had a comic side, but a dark comic side too. So this kind of seemed to be a good motif. But in a strange way, as time went on, I began to wonder whether or not we were meddling with something a little bit beyond, our knowledge.
That kind of be where I joke.
We were in some strange way summoning something.
I was going to say, you know, one of the things I've written extensively about is intent. The idea that we pray for an outcome, sometimes it happens. And realistically, perhaps you guys back in the day playing D&D may have maybe opened the door to this Riddles Brood thing to actually manifest, because it sounds to me a lot of your childlike, you know, shall we say childhood ideas of creepy and weirdness seem to be manifesting in something you love, which is the theater. So that's a really interesting idea, Claude.
Well, not only is it interesting, but, I forgot to mention that, you know, where me and my brothers used to play Dungeons and Dragons all the time was in that very same attic. So I think that might have been part of what jarred me back to that, if you want to call it that, because I hadn't lived there in many, many years. But then I moved back to my mother's house shortly before I started the theater company. It was a difficult time. You know, I didn't have a lot of money. I didn't have a job. So it was, you know, we were struggling. I was struggling to try to find some meaning. And that's when all this started happening. And I think being in that attic was what reminded me of those cool adventures that we had had as kids.
And, you know, we all had those adventures. And, of course, those adventures sometimes turn into full-blown love for the paranormal, like I have myself. And one thing I love to ask people as a paranormal investigator myself, you know, what is your opinion on hauntings and ghosts? Do you think that hat rack, shall we say, may have been, shall we say, spiritually attached? You know, I get this visual of this poor fella who never ever made it in the theater in New York. He just couldn't get there. So his spirit is on the trash can, shall we say. It's kind of on the corner where the trash is being dumped. And that poor spirit is now attached to the hat rack, who you've put into the show and is in every single one of your shows.
Yeah.
It's a happy ending for that ghost. What's your opinion on hauntings and shall we say, spiritual activity, ghosts?
I definitely believe that there's something definitely going on. Some of the dreams that I had really freaked me out. Like, I don't know. Me, right now, I'm like 43 years old. So when I was younger, I was very practical, I think, like a lot of people are, you know. And I didn't really believe in any of that stuff. The thing that happened with me as I got older and older was that things that seem like serendipity, things that seem like happenstance, really started to just not become believable anymore. Like, it just seemed like, you know, I just don't believe that it, I just can't explain away that anymore as just, luck. You know, it just started to seem, my rational mind came to believe, wait a minute, there's gotta be going on here, because too many things are happening in a way that seems to show some kind of pattern, some intelligent design here. That was my first part where I started to really believe that there's something going on. The other thing is some of the dreams that I had, when I tell you the vividness of them, some of them were quite frightening and happened over and over again. And some of them, I don't know if anybody else has had this experience, but when you wake up from a dream, sometimes you can close your eyes again and try to pretend you're there again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my case, sometimes I would wake up, and then I would close my eyes and imagine where I just was. And I would experiment with that. I would close my eyes and imagine where I was in the dream, and immediately the fear would return, and the sense that something was watching me would return right away. And then I would open up and I would look around the room and I would be awake, and then I would close my eyes again, and immediately I'd get the goosebumps again. So it was like, whoa, this is getting too close to reality now. There's something weird that I don't understand, and that's happening, you know? So it really made me feel that there is something that we don't yet understand as science.
Claude, 1,500 shows. Congratulations.
So yes, I do believe.
1,500 shows. Congratulations to you and your crew. I think that's awesome. But, you know, we got to notice a little something about the theater. Why do you think the paranormal is so prevalent in the theater? You know, I think of the Phantom of the Opera, Macbeth, Dracula, Frankenstein. It's all been done. Why is the paranormal so darn entertaining? And why is it so deep-rooted in the theater?
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting. I think part of the reason is, and I think a lot of actors would tell you, that theater is peculiar in that it kind of sits in an uncomfortable liminal space between reality and make-believe in and of itself. So it's, you know, in a way, it's real because you're real humans and you got real costumes on and you're really there. But you're performing. You're not actually having a real experience, really. You're pretending to have an experience. So it's also make-believe, and you can repeat it over and over again. So in a way, theater is a strange analogy for life, because one can then extrapolate the concept that, well, what if all of this life is really nothing but some kind of a simulation? So that is what I think makes theater innately supernatural, because it touches on an uncomfortable concept that maybe what we think of as reality is merely something more like an interesting video game, you know, that we're all playing, you know. So that's why I think theater particularly hits on these motifs.
You know, one thing I know for a fact, I've been in front of crowds myself. I'm a pro wrestler at heart, and I always have been. I've been retired now for a few years, but I just know that I've been in front of audiences myself, and I can feel them long after they've left the building. You know, I've theorized, of course, and I wrote about it in my book, that this may be like a mini haunting of sorts, with that energy trapped in the room after the curtain goes down. Do you feel the same way after a show, like that energy is still there?
Well, yeah, certainly. As a matter of fact, as an actor, especially, you know, if you're a very, I don't want to say talented actor, but if you're the type of actor that can really feel, you know, yourself on stage, I know me, when I'm on stage, I feel like almost like a sense of a radiation, like some kind of field coming out of me. And you can also feel the audience, you know, almost as if they're, you know, radioactive and they're pushing something out at you. You can almost feel like you're swimming in that energy. And it's really tangible, especially for an actor. And it's an unusual experience that most people don't feel, which is why I think that maybe if you're not a performer, what I'm saying may seem very strange or even silly. But when you're up on stage with 100 people and you're talking to them and their eyes are all on you and you can feel their 100 sentient minds all simultaneously focused on only you and what you're saying, there is a power that you mostly don't feel in your life. It's almost kind of like if you ever walked into a stadium or a football game and there's thousands of people, and when they all cheer, you get goosebumps because there's some feeling that you have. You're just not used to thousands of people all emoting simultaneously. Theater is like that, but more continuous.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, the theater is a beautiful metaphor for our real / maybe not so real world. Do you think that when our final curtain goes down, when we finally die, a part of us may stay on the stage, which is my little crafty way of saying the real world? Do you think a part of us may linger here?
Well, you know, it depends on how you view the world. Maybe it depends on the idea. Sometimes I wonder whether or not every single moment that we exist is in a way a separate entity. Like every moment that you exist is a separate self. So maybe even if you say you're at a show and, you know, someone were to shoot you on stage and you die, well, maybe, you know, it's that self that would continue to, the energy that made up your soul or whatever you want to call it at that moment would somehow survive. But for instance, it might not be something like that. Say you were there and something really powerful happened, but then you went on and lived beyond that. Maybe it's possible that a part of you still exists there because at that moment you were a disturbance in the ether there, you know, like something emotionally powerful happen, and it created a tangle and a knot, something there that persists even though you leave. It's possible.
Clyde, have you ever had a paranormal experience yourself in the theater? Like, have you ever maybe seen something that was a little strange? Have you ever heard anything? You know, I know that those rooms are large and they're built for sound, man. Have you ever been in the rehearsing and the strangest thing might happen? Anything like that ever go on?
Well, I mean, the one thing that we've had, and this kind of ties into the Riddles Brood and stuff, is that a lot of times the actors have felt, and I know I have felt, sometimes when you're in a show, you know, the lights are in your eyes. It's kind of hard to see the audience, but you see all the faces in the crowd. And it can be a kind of an unusual, surreal view. And it's also surreal in another way, because on one part of your mind is compartmentalized into reciting lines. You're playing a tape in your head. But there's another part of your head that's not really in the show. It's just there, like perceiving the show. It's very unusual. It's kind of like when you're driving and you realize, oh my God, I just drove for 3 miles or, you know, 20 minutes and I don't even remember coming to stoplights. Well, it's kind of like that with theater too. Sometimes you can do an entire show, especially if you've done the show a lot. You can go on autopilot and you're moving your face, you're saying lines, you're moving all over the place. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking of something else. It's just on autopilot. Well, this is where some people have said they see the thing in the audience. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but sometimes when you look out in the audience and you're doing your lines, some people say they feel like they see something kind of like sneaking around behind the people in the audience, like peeking around and looking at you. Mm-hmm. And there's a feeling like you always see this thing in the audience in the corner of your eye. And sometimes you'll look over and you don't see it because, again, the rays of the lights shining toward you make it hard to see. And you only see the faces a little bit and the darkness behind everybody because there's nothing lighting the back of the room. But, you know, there's been more than one occasion where I really did feel like I saw something, like look like it's kind of crawling behind the back row. Ooh. And the people don't notice it. Oh. Right. There's something back there. The audience, in a way, is a portal to somewhere else.
Hmm. That is so creepy. I think that's awesome.
Well, I think I've always thought that maybe the reason is because what happens is you get this gathering of so many people that are all focusing intently and emoting very strongly. They're living what they're watching on stage. So you have very few people up on a stage that are basically being used as puppets, and these people in the audience are all focusing on these people and projecting on them. And I think the intensity of that, the proximity of all those sentient beings in the same room, and the focus that they're all having in one direction, I think that seems to thin out the veil, you know, somehow there. And things normally that couldn't peek in can see this thinning and approach it and try to look in. So I think that is a very unusual aspect that's very supernatural that is unique to theater.
Well, let's think about it this way. Let's say you do pass on, you cross over, and you do have the ability to maybe pass between worlds. I don't know about you, but like, I'm not going to be wasting my time doing chores. I'm going to go take in the theater. I'm going to go to Disney World. I'm going to go to all these places where I just really want to go. And, who knows? Maybe that night when you looked out into the audience and seen those, for lack of better terms, shadow people, maybe you actually maybe came across something a little bit more paranormal than you think. That has been around for really since the dawn of time, seeing things out of the corner of our eye. And, I think that's very, very interesting that would happen in that intense. But the difference is that when most people see those things, they're not in a very intense situation like you would be when you're acting, when your mind is literally focused on lines for the most part and literally focused on being a character.
Well, that
it must be rather startling. It must be rather startling.
That's exactly the reason why I think is it's more, it occurs more there, because what happens is your, I guess you would call your analytical machine part of your brain is really kind of like processing, you know, okay, I'm going to move my mouth. I'm going to tilt my head. I wink one eye. I say this line. I'm waiting for the other person to turn around. Then I say this line. You are literally like the head of a tape deck, and you're playing this pre-recorded process that you do, and it requires a lot of energy for your brain to do that, but it doesn't require all of it. And the conscious part of your mind is bored with that after a while, so you start to daydream. And it's happened to pretty much every actor. If you've done a part for a long time and it gets a little bit stale with overuse, you start to daydream. As a matter of fact, sometimes that's when sometimes somebody can say hello, are you there? And they drop a line. Even very advanced actors can drop a line, not because they forgot it, just because they got too self-reliant on the fact that it'll just happen automatically, you know? and they realize, they come to, and they realize, I'm on stage. I better pay attention. And that's happened to me a lot.
For some reason, I still cling to the idea that you're still ghost watching you guys. So tell me, what
ghosts are hopefully nothing worse.
let's just hope they're the spirits who want to just hang out and see your show for free, right?
Yeah.
Have you been any
really? Why don't they pay their ticket like everybody else?
Yeah, really. I can see them just, oh my God, they definitely give you a blank check. They really would. I wonder what inflation's like over on the other side.
Right.
Oh, Clyde. You know, we've had a really interesting conversation. We've gone all over the place. You know, but we haven't talked a whole lot about your work and what's coming up for you. Now, this is my chance really to plug your book a little bit. But you've also written a book, and it illustrates how storytelling can impact a business brand for the positive. What's the name of the book?
Well, the book is actually highly supernatural. The book actually retells a lot of the things that I've touched on when I've talked to you about the thing in the audience. It talks about the hat rack. It talks about the dreams. And it goes on in great detail. It's actually a very – it even delves into some philosophical, metaphysical type of thing. So it's not just a regular book about theater. It's very unique. It's different.
Okay.
But as far as storytelling, I really believe that the unique nature of Riddles Brew Theater Company lends itself to really cool storytelling. It's very intriguing and very different. And unlike other ghost stories, I think what makes this so unique is that it's not like Phantom of the Opera, where it's just talking about, you know, a ghost that happens to be on a stage. In other words, it's really nothing more than a normal ghost story. It just happens to take place on a stage or whatever. But this is unique in that I believe that theater has a unique place in the supernatural, because I believe in some strange way it's an attractive, shiny object for perhaps another world or another dimension. I think in some ways performance and the fact that it's so much emotion in such a small contained space, it actually does serve some kind of strange purpose to allow different dimensions to meet. It's very different, very unusual.
Let's hope it keeps being unusual, because it's great for the All the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Folks, you can check out Clyde and his theater group, www.riddlesbrew.com. That's RIDDLESBROOD.com. You can also find out more at info@riddlesbrew.com. And of course, you can even check them also out on YouTube. Just look up Clyde Riddlesbrood, and I'm sure you'll come across some pretty wild stuff. Clyde, from the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, I really appreciate you on tonight. It was awesome.
Hey, thank you so much. And just remember, if you're in the audience of one of our shows, you might not want to turn around.
Yeah, you never know. Might be... Oh, my God. You know what? I just think, wouldn't that itself be an awesome story to tell on stage? Man, there's an idea for you, Clyde. Thank you so much for being on tonight.
Thank you, sir.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast, as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddities.